Kind of. I know. The hour change, why does that mess us up, right? This is a message I've been messing with for a while now. And I read this book about a month ago called Introverts in the Church. And it had an impact on me. And do you know what an introvert is? Are you familiar with introverts? More of the quieter inside as opposed to extroverts that are out and about and a little bit more, I don't know, what do you call that? A little more what? A little more expressive? Yeah. Okay, so introverts in the church, let me go to the next slide and I'll just possibly... Personality traits. There's a one called the DISC. So it's supposed to be the D-I-S-C. I change it just because of psychology in itself. The I's normally like to be first. They stand for inspirational. They're the cheerleaders, the bubbly, the really out there kind of thing, you know, just fun kind of thing. The D's stands for dominance. They're the ones who like to take control, take charge. The cautiousness, the C's, are the quieter ones working behind the scenes, and the supportiveness or the steadiness is what the S's are. And I change it around because they normally like to be first with the I's. They like to know what's happening and be involved immediately. The D's are like, okay, you me now. This one definitely doesn't want to be last because they'll think something's wrong with them, and this one really doesn't care. But that's just a real quick... Anybody into psychology like this kind of stuff? Or really? Nobody? Yes, a couple? I really get into this kind of stuff, so... I don't apologize for it, but the first two are more extroverts, the last two are more introverts, the first two are more the starters, the last two are more the finishers. If you're one of these two personalities and you start a book, no matter how bad the book is, you will finish it. If you're one of the first two and you start a book and it just stinks, you're welcome to set it aside. This group might start another book, but they'll still keep the mark on the other book because someday they're going to finish it, because you never know how the book may end and it might be a good book. Puzzles. That group will start a puzzle, and if they're done with it, they're bored of it, they'll put it away. This group probably will not stop it until it is finished. Okay? Let me go. That's just a real quick kind of thing with it, okay? Let me go to the next one. When you get to the four personalities, you have the first one has a lot of enthusiasm, the second one takes charge, third one is really emphasis on quality. Your musicians often have an aspect of this. You're not just going to be one of these, it'll be a mixture of these. And the last one typically is a good listener. I make it a little easier. The first one likes to do things the fun way, my way, or the highway is a phrase we use sometimes. You know, I don't care how it's done, long as it's done my way. They want to make sure things are done the right way, and they want to have them done the easy way. I've noticed with students studying, there can be cultural differences, and I get that, but we'll have some, if I give a group project and say, you guys work on this, and you'll hear a student say, good, let's all get together at my house tonight, I'll get a movie and some pizza, and they're thinking immediately the fun way. The next one will say, you know what, it's 40 questions, you take questions 1 through 10, you take 11 through 20, you know, you go, this next one looks at the other people in the group saying, you know what, I don't really trust all of their answers. So they're going to do all 40 of them anyhow and to make sure that they're done right. And this last one's looking at another group, seeing if they're doing the same thing, saying, hey, you're doing the same questions I'm doing. When you're done, can I copy yours? So they're, you know, it's just real broad strokes I'm making there. I'm not going to be able to cover everything immediately, but let me go to the next one. In Scripture, Peter would have... Sorry about that. Just slow down, right? Peter would have been high eye. He's the guy who, Jesus, that's you, have me come out, and starts walking on water. And would have continued if he probably didn't look down. And we give Peter a hard time for that, like you immediately step out on water. Really? He's the only one who walked on water. The ones who didn't have faith are the ones who stayed in the boat. He's the one that when Jesus says, who do people say I am? He's the one who immediately answers. Paul is the one who is stoned. And when they finish stoning him and drag him out of the city, they're dragging him. Think about dragging somebody on the ground, you know, for ways. I don't know the situation. I don't know if he was comatose and finally came to, or if he was dead and came back to life. Either way, it was a miracle. But he comes back too. As he comes too, he looks at the disciples and goes, we need to go in that town. And I know the other disciples have to be thinking, Paul, they just stoned you. I don't think they like you. But he's the one saying, they're the ones who need the Lord. Let's go right back there. The see, Luke wrote two books in the Bible. The first one would be Luke. Very good. Okay, the second one. Acts. Yeah, he continues on. Do you know how many times Luke uses his name in the book of Acts? More than 10? Less than 10? Yeah, less than one. The only way we know, the main way we know that Luke wrote Acts is he starts off by saying, this is the second epistle I'm writing to Theophilus. Which, think about naming a kid that. He is the awfulest kid I've ever seen. No, but, he starts off with, in Luke writing to Theophilus, he then continues in Acts writing to Theophilus. We know it's the same author. We start looking through some details into how he writes that, and we know it's the same author. But he is one who is always behind the scenes working. It is great for Paul to have Luke walking around with him. Paul gets beat up, thrown in prison, comes out, Luke takes care of him. Luke's occupation was? Doctor? You think it's good for Paul to have a doctor with him? Yes. Very detail-oriented. John is the one, and if you look at the animals, you're going to find out there's a whole study that's been done with personalities with animals. And that the high eyes are the playful ones. And if you think of an otter, now O-T-T-E-R, don't say O-D-D-E-R, you know, it just. But if you view of them as being an otter, they're playful always, have fun. Great storytellers, a lot of excitement, enthusiasm. The high D's are going to be the lion, takes charge, takes control of situations. The C's are going to be a beaver. Think about dropping a tree with your teeth. The hard work, constantly working through this. And the S's are the golden retrievers. With John, at the Last Supper, when I spoke here a couple weeks ago, I referred to this. John's the one who's leaning on Jesus. You talk about loyalty. We have a golden retriever at home. And our golden retriever is constantly, her name is Jada, right? And I constantly, whenever I get up, I say, Jada, move. Because wherever I'm at, she's going to be immediately by my feet. So, you know, I want to take a step. Move, Jada, move. You know, and just, they're always right there, the loyalty of constantly being with you. So, a real quick, when I was doing with this, people have been talking about what was Jesus when it came to personality. And normally people will say he was more along this line, but this book talks more about him being this way. And if you're more of an introvert, well, let me say it this way. A difference between these two and the first two. Remember I said earlier, extroverts, introverts? The extroverts typically gain energy from being with people. And the more they talk with people, the more energy they have. The introverts typically gain energy like when they can get away and get by themselves. They can be with people, they like people, but they've had too much of people. Okay? I mean, some of you can totally understand what I'm saying here. And you're going to find in the churches, the large church movement, 70 to 80% of pastors of these large churches are of this, the extrovert area, where few are introverts. And even in our church settings, we really emphasize the be friendly, get out there, talk to people, you know, fellowship with people, do things with people, have people in your house, and all these kinds of things. And for the introvert, it's like, where do I fit in the church? And I know in this room, we can have a whole mixture. I also know that culturally, you can be, if I'm talking to Middle Eastern women, they've basically been forced to be introverts. Fair statement? You follow me on this okay? And so, some cultures can be more expressive, some choose to be more expressive. You guys typically with me are not expressive, right? Unless I say something dumb and then you laugh at me. No, it's okay. But the introverts, as I'm watching the life of Jesus, I'm realizing more and more and through this book really caught my attention of when Jesus spent time with people during the day, there's never a situation where he tried to get a crowd. It's wherever he went, a crowd came about. We have one situation when the crowd comes about, he gets in a boat and gets a little bit offshore to preach to them. Is that because it gave a better angle for him communicating, people seeing him, better acoustics, or was it like the people were just getting too close and he needed his personal space? Do we understand that? When he finishes a long day, he tells the disciples, go across the Sea of Galilee. I'll meet you over the other next town. And he goes up into the mountain by himself and prays. We find him often going off by himself and praying, regrouping. And so I want to say, you know, getting into this, and this is working on my mind, and I realize, you know, time-wise, I did not know today was Communion Sunday, so I'm really trying to work through this a little bit quicker for you, but I know your minds can actually handle that better probably. But as I'm watching with the life of Jesus, to be more of an introvert, to be able to relate to those who aren't always wanting to be in the limelight, who always don't want to be up front, those who need their space, who need their time, who need to regroup, that don't need a big scene kind of situation. And with that being stated, can we go to the next slide, please? The topic of passion comes about. Passion, I think we often view more of an extrovert kind of reaction, the more of expressive and outlet kind of thing, but an introvert can have the passion, and I really think that passion is something that may be lacking, not maybe, it is lacking in the church. Passion's lacking with us. Do we really feel the passion? The word for passion in the Greek is pathema, which is no big deal there, and there's nothing I'm going to drive off from that, but it's used 16 times in the Bible. Two times in English, it's translated to say passion. 14 times it's translated to be suffering or sufferings. And that intrigued me. That passion means suffering. I would have viewed it more as passion being I'm consumed with something. I'm so caught up into something. But the translation means suffering. And I guess it's you're so caught up in something that it hurts. You love someone so much that it hurts. You know, when you're not with them, you want to be with them. It hurts. You love something so much, you know, you're whatever it is, that when you're not doing that, it hurts not to do that. And I want to take that whole concept of passion into prayer. And I think that, and I talked a little bit about the prayer last time, that, but with prayer, how often do we allow our emotions to get involved with prayer? And there's two situations of prayer I want to go to today, and just look at the stories there and to see what is involved. And I was talking to a friend and I was working on something and I was sharing that, and I apologize for being so passionate about it. And he said to me, never apologize for passion. That's what's missing in the church right now. And so if we really love Jesus Christ, others would know. I guess I could even go so far to say that we wouldn't even have to tell them. We'd probably end up telling them because we did. But just because of how much we were consumed with him. Next slide, please. 1 Samuel 1, 1 and 2. And I'm going to start right from verse 1, even though where I really want to go into is gets down to like verse 12. There was a certain man named Ramathaim, a Zephite, from the hill country of Ephraim, whose name was Elkanah, son of Jeroboam, son of Ehud, the son of Tahol, the son of Zoph, an Ephraimite. He had two wives, and we're not going to get into the whole distinction there culturally and that kind of stuff, but one was called Hannah, and the other Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had none. Next, just follow. Yeah, thank you. Year after year, this man went up from the town to worship and sacrifice the Lord Almighty at Shiloh. where Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were priests of the Lord. Whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife and to his sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion, because he loved her, and the Lord had closed her womb. Because the Lord had closed Hannah's womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her till she wept and would not eat. Her husband Elkanah would say to her, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Kidding. Once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli, the priest, was sitting in his chair by the doorpost of the Lord's house. In her deep anguish, Hannah prayed to the Lord, weeping bitterly. And she made a vow, saying, "Lord Almighty, if you would only look on your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I'll give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head." As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk, and said to her, How long are you going to stay drunk? Put away your wine." "Not so, my Lord," Hannah replied. "Am I still okay with you? Did I stop there? I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of the great anguish of the Lord." Eli answered, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him." This passage catches my attention because he thinks she's drunk. She's saying, "I was pouring out my soul to the Lord." It just, even way back then, Eli doesn't realize passion, doesn't recognize passion, doesn't notice passion, doesn't realize when someone is so caught up and consumed in prayer that it might have a physical effect on them. And he's like, "You must be drunk." And she's like, "I'm not drunk. I'm sorry, I was just so caught up in prayer." And I wonder for ourselves, when was the last time we were praying so much that you're just so deep in prayer that we just like lost? Oh, we weren't aware of our surroundings. And maybe we were just mouthing things and people like, "Well, you talking to somebody?" And like, "Oh, well, I was just praying. You know, they'd just be accused of something else. That here he sees her praying and she's like, "Wow, she must be drunk." But she's so caught up in prayer. And I just want us to really take a moment and think through that of just what is it that really catches our attention, that puts us to a point where we just plead with God, and not the flippant prayers, and not just the fly-by prayers, and the simplistic little prayers, and the prayers at night when we fall asleep in the middle of them. And I'm not saying that's a horrible thing. Now, that's actually probably a pretty cool thing, that the last thing you did before you went to sleep was talk to God. But if you're really caught up into a conversation, you probably don't fall asleep in the middle of it either. And what are some things that we're praying about now that we really, you know, can you jump ahead 2 slides? Do you guys remember this movie? Christmas Story? Have you guys ever seen this movie? No, seriously. This is one of those times you just have to raise your hand if you have. Please, just, I won't ask you to do it again today, but have you seen this movie before? Okay, thank you. I was getting nervous. This is a hilarious movie. Not that we'd ever recommend movies in a church, but you have, this is what, he sticks his tongue to a pole and it sticks, you know, touches his tongue to it and sticks to it and kind of thing. That's just a funny situation, if you remember the movie kind of thing. There's also, this movie has the bar of soap in the mouth and it has the lamppost, it's a leg, and it must be Italian because it's fragile or whatever, you know, just...